Hello there, my name is Chris Kirk and welcome to TW Talks, the interviews podcast from Free Weeks Edinburgh. We are at Edinburgh Festival 2023. I have set myself up in a little room just next to the Bristow Square, George Square hub of the fringe, and I am grabbing a load of people who are performing at the festival this year to talk past, present and future. The story so far, this year's show and what's happening next. Today, Sachin Kumarendran, who has a show called Deceit at Just the Tonic at the Caves. I spoke to him early on in the festival about that show and also a little bit about the past and the future. So let's get TW talking with Sachin Kumarendran. So we are here at the Edinburgh Fringe. We have another guest here coming to talk about their current show at Edinburgh Festival 2023, but also how we got here and where we may be going next. Past, present and future is what we cover. So we've got Sachin Kumarendran. Thank you for joining us here at the Edinburgh Fringe. And we are just a few days in, so we're going to talk more about this year's show in a moment, but maybe just tell me, how is your Fringe going so far as we're sort of at the beginning of week one as we speak?
Yeah, it's good. It's very tiring. I struggle to think of a synonym for tiring to kind of elaborate that into a longer and more coherent point. It's been good. I got my first review, just came in, 4 stars of Entertainment Now, so that's heartening to learn that some benefit has come from all of this work. So that's been good. And it sort of simultaneously feels like I can't believe a week has flown by, and also I can't really remember a time before I was in Edinburgh for this Fringe. So
that's a very relatable experience. That first week where, yes, you're right, it's sort of like, how did we get here already yet? That first week can feel so long with all of the getting to Edinburgh, setting things up, dealing with the technical stuff. You arrived with a box of flyers, lumping paper around town. And then, of course, somewhere in the middle of that, getting on stage and performing a show.
Yeah. It's a lot of different hats to wear, I suppose, between all the different things you've got to do.
Yeah, and that's one thing that interests me about this festival is that in some ways, yes, it's a brilliant festival of comedy and theatre and culture. But behind the scenes, it's kind of a festival of what I like to call it cultural entrepreneurialism, although that sounds a bit pretentious, I realise. But lots of basically every artist is a business and they are here to build their profile, to build their audience. And all of that is going on behind the scenes as well as what we see on stage.
Yeah. It's a festival of admin. For sure.
Festival of spreadsheets.
A lot of admin. That's just one of the things I missed when I first started coming up here. It didn't feel as much as there was sort of like a lower, less to be gained from coming when I was just very, very new. It was also, it felt like more of a jolly.
Yes.
Less of a work endeavor.
Here to get on stage and have a good time rather than be here for an agenda. Well, let's do the story so far before we start talking about this year's show, because this is your first full hour at the Edinburgh Fringe that you're performing this year. But you have been here before. So I guess approximately when did you first come to Edinburgh? I mean, the first time you came, were you doing some sets or did you initially just come as a fan to see shows?
I came just as a fan in 2015 and then I did some of my first ever spots in 2016 with a university show, and again in 2017. I'd sort of done a few real gigs to actual adults who were over the age of 21 by the time the 2017 thing came around, and I was in So You Think You're Funny that year. And then in 2018, I did a compilation show and some guest spots in 2019. So I'd sort of performed at 4 fringes before the pandemic in some capacity, but not really had the stress of taking a proper show.
But I guess, so you were doing it as a student, I guess?
Yeah.
And then, so there was, before the pandemic, there was that progression from I'm here, I do comedy as a student, and I'm here doing a bit of stuff at the Fringe, to actually taking that step to be, no, I'm not just a student doing comedy, I am a comedian, I am starting on that journey.
Yeah, that was kind of it. I guess it went through that change between 2016 and 2019.
Then the pandemic hit. So I guess that was bad timing for you, because I sort of feel that maybe 2020 was when you were ready to really come here to do the festival and there was no festival.
Yeah, it was it's pros and cons. I had applied to the festival that year, but then I also wasn't sure how I was going to afford it and stuff. And then a pandemic came along and that sort of kicked everything into touch for a couple of years. And then by the time it came back, I was like, I've got a bit more money now. Day jobs ramped up a bit since then. So and comedy earnings ramped up a bit, thankfully, as well. So it's a bit more feasible now. So the pandemic was, I mean, I was backing myself into a cul-de-sac. So the pandemic was no bad thing. But obviously, it was in, you know, many, many myriad respects. But for my specific comedy career, it had pros as well as cons.
Yeah, because I guess, you know, when you're building comedy career, particularly in the UK, one of the really key things that Edinburgh has for comedians when you're in that cycle is it just gives you the deadline, doesn't it? That every year you're meant to progress, you're meant to move on to the next stage. And in one level, having that deadline is really good because we can all do an unmovable deadline to make us progress. But then I think, as you say, although it was very annoying that the 2020 festival didn't go ahead, I think there were plenty of people who were like, oh, actually, that gives me another year.
Yeah, yeah. Or 2 years.
Oh, 2 years, as it turns out.
I suppose when 2021 did go ahead, but I think
streamlined,
it was reduced, yeah.
So you were here last year. So last year you took the step up, but doing the there was two of you each doing 30 minutes in a 60-minute show.
Yeah, that's pretty much it, yeah.
And was that a compilation? You mentioned doing a compilation show. Was that 30 minutes sort of an aggregation of material you've been doing in previous years, or did you write 30 minutes for that show?
It was, do you know, it varied depending on the day, because it it wasn't something like, it wasn't like this now where it's a polished show, and I had a lot more than 30 minutes I wanted to run out at the Fringe. So if the audience were, you know, it was a Saturday night, they're all drunk, it would be like a club set. And then if it was a quieter sort of Monday or Tuesday, fewer people in, much more sober crowd, something that's a bit more longer bits, which are a bit more kind of the artsy side of the spectrum, you could sort of try out and give some of the members of the squad that don't get a run out as often some
tryout.
Yeah, exactly. And develop those bits that, you know, sort of a weekend club gig, you don't, aren't really bits you would call upon.
So interesting, you were able to do that. You were performing within the Free Fringe last year, weren't you? And I know that some people, well, mainly very old people now, but some people who talk about the old days of the Fringe, and when I say that now, I am probably talking the 80s and the 90s. That's how old. Where there were some comedians who would come and try out material. And there was always that classic thing of if you went on the train up to Edinburgh, start of August, back in the late 80s, early 90s, you'd find lots of comedians desperately trying to finish their show that they were going to do for the first time 2 days later. Whereas I guess now, and I think you've probably felt this pressure this year, a lot of comedians feel the pressure. You've got to arrive with a show that is ready to go. And then you basically have a set show that you're going to do for 21, 25 days. Have that flexibility of being able to, like, oh, what's the audience like tonight? Oh, maybe I'll do this, maybe I'll do that. It's not necessarily something that many comedians can do at the Edinburgh Fringe anymore.
No, I suppose it's, I maybe by that stage had some awareness that would probably be the last kind of one where it'd be like that. So I was like, well, I might as well, you know, enjoy and use that flexibility whilst I can, and this in a show that was, you know, felt relatively more low stakes and relaxed,
yep,
than a sort of formal debut hour or hour of any description, I suppose.
So let's bring us to this year. So this is the first full hour here at the Edinburgh Fringe. And the way I always describe that to people outside of the Fringe world or the comedy world, I spend a lot of time in the music industry, and to me it always feels like for comedians, particularly in the UK, that first hour in Edinburgh is kind of the equivalent of the first album for an artist. It is where you have arrived. You may well have been doing years and years in the clubs doing your 10, 20 minute sets, but to have that full hour that has a bit of a narrative and a bit of a theme and more of a structure is actually quite a big step forward.
Yeah, it's brought new challenges, and I think I'm glad that I waited a little bit longer than maybe I might have to do it, and it's given me plenty of time in other comedy festivals around the country to develop the show and some numerous kind of preview shows which are, you know, put on for that very purpose of, this is an Edinburgh preview, this is an act developing your Edinburgh show. So it's given me much more time to do that preparatory work. So in the respect of sort of, it's certainly been a lot to think about, but I'm a sort of fortunate consequence of having that kind of
gap. The fourth shutdown.
Yeah, that's actually provided quite a lot of time to do that work.
Now, the show is called Deceit.
Yes.
Which might tell us that nothing you've said so far is true, but let's assume the deceit's only beginning from this point onwards. So tell us the premise of the show.
It's something that happens in a short sentence. Lying is a recurrent theme of it. It's sort of a number of situations that stories and embarrassing mishaps that have happened to me that sort of build and tie into one another. And then there's stories. This is kind of a few stories about how I tried to get onto television. I got approached to be on the return of the TV show Shipwrecked in 2018 when they brought that back. And then because of a mix-up, I ended up on the wrong show, which was a show specifically looking to recruit people who had skills in lying. You'd imagine there'd be careers that look for that, like sales and stuff, but it's very odd to see open recruitment on those grounds. And they were sort of asked bizarre things in the interview for that about like sort of what your attitude and your philosophy on lying was. And I was like, it's quite an unexpected twist in a interview audition setting.
Didn't expect that till you got to the interview?
It mentioned in the written casting call out that they wanted people who could lie convincingly, but I didn't expect to be asked to sort of explain my philosophy on lying, which was a very strange, do you know what I mean? You think like, oh, give us a, describe a time you worked in a team or something like that is more off the template. So that was interesting. So the CV in lying, all of the smaller and more seemingly at the time inconsequential lies led to this thing where I got my TV breakthrough. So that was nice, and yeah, I never would have seen that being the seen that experience coming in handy in the way that it did.
So how have you taken that basic theme of deceit and that story and lying, how have you taken that to shape it into the show?
It's sort of this, it's kind of easier seen in the show than said in a kind of dispassionate 60-second summary. But it's sort of an element of kind of because the thing I like, how the show is, you've got themes and through lines, and some of which are more overt, some of which are more subtextual, some of which are, you know, there's varying degrees in which the audience, some of them are just there for a laugh, some of them are there to kind of see something which is more like structured and where they can kind of make their own inferences as to what you've done. And so there's ones which are very on the nose, like a story about how I lied and pretended to be taller than I actually am, which is kind of, you know, a story that I can use in club comedy sometimes because it's very what it says on the tin. And then there's some other bits which are more like the themes side, where you're trying to create kind of structural sleight of hand, I guess. So that's where the deceit element sort of manifests itself in differing ways.
I guess when you've called the show Deceit, in a way, you can do nothing that the blurb says.
Oh,
and actually,
yeah,
you have fulfilled the name of the show.
Yeah, that I did occur to me. I was like, well, you can't really be angry with Deceit not delivering on what you expected in terms of the sort of exact specific subject matter and stuff like that. So that was, I was like, oh, that's an added bonus.
I know some comedians I've spoken to over the years about doing that first hour when you've done quite a lot of years doing the 10-20 minute club set is the idea that people can't laugh solidly for 50-55 minutes. I mean, even if, you know, it's the funniest routine in the, actually after about half an hour, you want a little, as an audience member, you want a little bit of a lull. But as a comedian where you're constantly looking for the return on the line, sometimes crafting a show where it's like, do you know what, it's going to be 10 minutes in the middle where it's going to quiet down a bit, is kind of a weird thing for you to have to do, but that's probably what the format needs.
Yeah, it presents its own challenges. Like I have a sort of about the 40-minute mark. I've been warned by more experienced comics, this is a kind of 40-minute lull, because in a normal club comedy show, you would have a section of more than 40 minutes in length because there's a recognition the audience need to recharge and get a break. So that extra 20 minutes presents the kind of disproportionate challenge. I've got sort of a PowerPoint and video section that comes in around that time to kind of mix it up format-wise, and that's worked very well in the previews to kind of give the audience a kind of slight change of pace, and it tends to bring them sort of back into it. And I do worry because I've heard at the Edinburgh Fringe there's maybe a bit of snobbery from some of the bigwigs about PowerPoint, but it's pretty popular with the audiences. It seems odd, like a thing that's a mad thing to be opposed to, like an ideological objection to PowerPoint. It's the sort of thing where I imagine Vladimir Putin would look at that and go, well, even to me, that seems a bit mad.
I think that almost traces back. There was I remember when Dave Gorman did a series of shows year after year, which were brilliant, which were very PowerPoint-centric.
Like Google, and on that,
the back of that, everyone started doing PowerPoint shows. And I think that maybe you're right. There's still a little bit of a backlash. Whereas I've seen so many shows, where, okay, it's not the entire hour is a slideshow, but there's just something in the middle where there's some visual element to the show. 100%, I think it can really sort of help the show sort of progress and give you a little bit of an alternative feel as it goes. So I'm definitely pro.
Oh, nice, thank you.
The PowerPoint presentation's in the middle. You've just got to make sure that the projector in the venue's working on the...
Yes, it does. That is one negative to that. It's so much more to think about in terms of setting up a show that uses any form, like I imagine the same for music as well, like any sort of alternative technology that's not just the microphone.
Yeah.
Becomes so much more disproportionately inconvenient to kind of set up and plan out and think about.
I saw a show last night, actually, the whole show was pretty much a PowerPoint slide, but very much fitted the show. But and he was using a little clicker, the little remote control thing.
Yeah.
And the first few slides were meant to go before he came on stage to sort of set up his performance, but he had to come to the edge of the stage with the clicker because it wasn't working. And it was like, oh yes, the slideshow should be easy to do, but alas, no. So the first hour is obviously a big step for any comedian's career. I mean, looking to the future now, is the plan to take this show elsewhere? Is that what you're hoping to do?
I'd like to, yes, because I like the show and I've gotten, like, you get a bit bored of your club set when you just do that hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times. Whereas, you know, this show, sort of, in total, including the four I've done so far at this festival, I've probably done about, 25, 24 kind of performances of, so it's not, I'm not as jaded to it as I would be. So I'd like to take it on to other places. I don't know necessarily where, because some of the other, that's the thing with Edinburgh Comedy, the other comedy festivals, you tend to do more of one or two dates, whereas in Edinburgh, you get 25 dates. So it's a bit like, even if you do all the other comedy festivals, that might add up to being like 20% of the number of shows that you would do at Edinburgh. So I think month-long festivals, I suppose, you're looking more internationally than like the Australian ones.
Yeah.
And I think Montreal just for laughs as well. I actually am going over to Canada in September to do a couple of gigs in Toronto and visit family. So I don't know if that will serve any reconnaissance. But who knows?
Pop over to Montreal, check it out.
Yeah, maybe one of those.
Put your French to the test.
Oh God, I GCSE French was a long time ago.
And then, do you anticipate being back in a year's time with another hour? Are you already in your head thinking what that might be, or are you going to see what happens with this show moving forward and then make a decision?
I may change my mind, but I think I will want to take longer than a year to write another show, because it's sort of, I've spent 6 years or even a little bit longer since I started stand-up developing this show, and I feel confident in the show because of that amount of time. I think when you start banging them out every year, probably, some, not always, but there's going to be some, you would imagine if 100 acts did that, you would see a decline in quality of output from the majority of them. So my inclination is probably, as I did with the debut, to wait a little bit longer than I might
maybe
have.
Maybe leave it a couple of years.
Yeah.
Unless some TV company shows up next month with a weird interview.
Yeah,
some kind of
bizarre offer I can't refuse.
Okay, well, we will wrap it up there. But before we do that, just very quickly give us the plugs, the time, the venue, etc. for
people who
are in Edinburgh.
It is every day at 6 p.m., Just the Tonic at the Caves, just out the box. Your show is called Deceit. It's £5 for a ticket, or pay what you want if you... So you can get in for free and then pay what you wish at the end of the show. I am also in the AAA Late Showcase, Underbelly, every night at 9:05 p.m.
And finally, where can people check you out online, whether that's website, social, whatever?
I'm on all of the platforms. I'm on Facebook, TikTok, and Instagram as Sachin Kumar Rendran. That was taken on Twitter. Fortunately, I have a more unwieldy handle of Sachin Kumar End 1, because for some reason Sachin Kumar End was taken on Twitter. But fortunately, Twitter's popularity seems to be tanking.
It's waning, isn't it? And
yeah.
Elon Musk is stealing people's Twitter handles anyway. So who cares?
Yes. So check me out on any of those platforms. Sachin Kumar End on the other three, and Sachin Kumar End 1 on Twitter.
Fantastic. Well, have a good rest of the festival, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you.